What's your philosophy about you think being in the prep room while you're pregnant? I know there's a ton of variety of different opinions and things that, I mean, some people they need to do it. That's their obligation, but others have different say. And honestly, I don't know that much about it, so I'd love your opinion on that, Jackie, and what you think and what you've heard over the course of your pregnancy.
Well, I think, because I mean, I've worked with directors who wearing gloves is even an option for them. And I've worked with other people, like at least in school, we're taught head to toe, full PPE and everything. So I feel like if you're pretty, you're wearing a mask and you're being safe about that, I see no problem with it. Of course, just try to protect yourself as much as possible. But other people have just different opinions when it comes to the chemicals themselves, because some people say, it's so fast out of your system. Other people say they like to stay in your system. So it's whatever you really want to expose baby to.
And that's everyone's own, rights to have their opinion. And it is weird that we have such a variety speaking on, on behalf of PPE and such. I'm totally with you. I've had funeral directors over my career that gloves aren't really even an option. I remember my grandfather would come out of the prep room eating a sandwich, and it'd be like, "What are you doing? Like, that's disgusting." But that's the variety. And then you have other people that are in the prep room that are head to toe, like you said, like you would find in mortuary school, and that's the way that they embalm every case, and they're extra have extra precaution for everything. So it's just interesting that it's not really mandated, and it varies across the board. For me personally, I am somewhere sort of in the middle. Like, I'm gonna wear gloves. Trust me on that. I'm wearing gloves. But I wear, just my scrubs, and maybe you wear a little apron on top of it, but I don't go too much further than that unless it's a case where it's warranted for other purposes most of the time. But it's to each their own. I don't think there's one right reason or wrong reason. I heard I someone sent me this article this week about how it was someone's take, someone's opinion that they think formaldehyde is going to be on the wayside, and they're going to be trying different chemicals because of cancer-causing things. It was very interesting coming from someone I've probably embalmed like 1,000+, definitely 1,000+ bodies. So it's like I've inhaled plenty of that.
Not going nowhere.
No, how has it been being pregnant as a funeral director? I know you're avoiding the prep room a little bit now, so to speak. You're doing more front office work, things like that. How has the whole journey been for you? And also, congratulations, of course.
Thank you. It's been a little bit of a disaster to say the least. Just because me and my husband were stationed down in Kentucky for the first half of my pregnancy, and I did not foresee the struggles I would be having trying to join the force down there versus at home where I have a lot of connections and where I was working. But I only thing I could do to get into the field was doing removals, and in early pregnancy it's possible, but it was definitely a struggle, and I never took off from down there. I never got apprenticeships. I never got a hold of nobody. And I mean, like I was bugging people. I was doing everything, but it wasn't until I came home that I was able to get an internship again.
Well, that's good that you were able to find something, and I'm surprised by that. It seems like, I mean, at least in my area, and I know a lot of people that we talk to, funeral directors are a premium. Anyone's going to take one, and everyone's begging for them. But obviously, different parts of the country, you might have more family-owned, smaller funeral homes where it's just not as easy to get in.
And that's what I really saw. I ended up working for second largest corporate company to do removals, but even then they were struggling with call volume. They had really nobody down there, and they were also trying to do kind of their own removal team, but also integrated corporal removal team. So it was just kind of a disaster. I didn't get any calls. I was helping out with moving cremation cases around. But still it was challenging, especially, it's my first time pregnant and doing all of that. It was just a nightmare.
I can only imagine. And that's a lot to be doing when you're pregnant. Like, your body's dealing with a lot of other stuff, a lot of changes, and then you're moving around the hundreds of boxes. That It can't be a pleasant situation. So what made you move then? Was it then your husband? Then I'm assuming that he got transferred to a different base or something like that.
No, he's still at that base. I ended up transferring because I was really struggling with money. And as you may know, the army does not pay well, let alone for two people. And I decided it was best. Because I finished mortuary school in September and I moved home in December. So I had, a couple of months, even after finishing school and after completing both of my boards, that I couldn't get anywhere. So I had to move home. And like same week I moved home, I had three interviews and I was all ready to go. And it's just crazy. I don't know what it is with the market down there or what, but yeah, because it was local funeral homes and corporate funeral homes, but everybody wants to retire. Everyone was burnt out. Nobody wants to train a new person, or they didn't have it in the budget.
I feel you. That makes sense. So your husband's still down there, and does he come back and forth? Oh my gosh, that's got to be so hard, especially when you're pregnant. Like that's, oh, that must have like ripped your heart apart. That's got to be terrible.
It's awful, but we're getting through it. It's been a little more difficult because when I first joined the field 2 or 3 years ago, he was deployed over in Europe, and I had a wonderful local funeral home. They took me in, they showed me the ropes. It was my first funeral home ever, and if it wasn't for them, I probably wouldn't be in the field, and that was a lot easier, and I really thrived there.
It's good. Once you get that nice first experience, you're kind of striving for that for the rest of your career almost. If you have a good, sometimes you have a terrible first experience, you're like, I want anything but that. But I've heard that from plenty of people. It's like, this is what made me get into the industry, and they're trying to get back to that motivation and that a lot of times the camaraderie that you have with the other funeral directors that encourage you to go into mortuary school. So was that the reason you think you went? Was because of that role, or did you have interest in the field before?
Well, it all started in high school as a dream, and I thought it was no different than trying to become like an astronaut. It was just something way out there, way too much, and I had a lot of
Sounds like more of a
people.
nightmare than a dream to me.
Well, when you're in high school and you're a weird kid, and I had a lot of discouragement and I put it off, and I decided to become a CNA, and I worked at hospice for 3 years and became really hands-on with death and dying. And I was really inspired by removal techs. I'm like, God, I want to do that one day. That looks so cool. And I enrolled in mortuary school while I was a CNA. And then while I was in between jobs and I just started school, I reached out to that funeral home and they're like, yeah, we'll take you in and show you the ropes. And it was wonderful.
Oh, great. That's nice then. What was it like being, in hospice care? That is just one of the most challenging jobs. It rivals ours, and probably not even probably, very likely tougher than ours, especially from an emotional standpoint, from what I would consider. How was that job, and what would you say was like the highs and lows of being a hospice nurse?
It definitely was comparable because I was doing a lot of hands-on care. That was my job. I wasn't my job to talk to families. It was really just go in, take care of the patient, and be there for them, which I can say is pretty comparable to the prep room. And I really think that's where I thrive. I thrive on hands-on care and physically taking care of people. But I loved it, but it was just so physically demanding. And, it's really weird how they pay CNAs on hospice because it's hourly, so if somebody dies, you lose hours and you lose pay, and it's not really, it doesn't make a lot of sense because people are meant to die on hospice. But
That's
it's
part of the
really
whole
similar
game.
to,
That's what happens.
yeah, you'd think they'd have like salary or something, but it's very comparable to being in the prep room where you get this quality time with this person and you get to sit down and just work with them. Some people were really there, others were not, and some people can have a conversation, other can't. And I loved it, but big difference, especially with this field, is just meeting with these families. I didn't do any of that. I didn't handle any of their grief, really.
Yeah, that's a whole different, if you're that's like from going from being just straight prep room to going front of the house. That's a huge difference when you're just in there and you're pretty much you and that person that has passed, and that is your sole focus then to dealing with families and trying to understand the dynamic, that's extremely different arrangement that you probably went through.
Yeah, and but it was, I will say this, it did provide a full circle view on things because in mortuary school they really talk about, death and dying and, grieving and all of that. And when you're able to be there for a patient in their final moments and watch the transition, I've watched a lot of people actually die, and it's a very transformative experience. And it brings a new light to every decedent you see. It makes it so, you can imagine each one of them having their own lives and their own families and everything they went through.
Yeah, that's so true. I like to, like, sometimes I think about it, stuff like that often, to be honest with you. Like, I'll be walking down the street, or I'll be driving, and I'll just see a person passing by me. 99.999% of people would just like look at that person, not even think twice. But sometimes, maybe I'm weird though. Sometimes I like to think about, like, that person has their own life and stuff that they're going through and stuff that I have no clue about, and they have their own everything. And just like you and I talking, we both have our own lives. We're connecting right now, but it's completely separate and different. It's, I don't know, it's, I know I'm very, that's very philosophical and like out there, but it's something when you go through this industry and you see people die, or you deal with people that are dead, you have a little bit of a different perspective, I think, than most other people.
And I've even met with, removal techs, and they are very burnt out, and it's really hard for them at the end of the day to, appreciate. And I know it's a weird way to say you appreciate death, but I do think there is a beauty behind every decedent, and there's a whole life there. And just because they've passed doesn't mean their body is nothing now. It obviously means something to someone.
Yeah,
But
of
I
course.
really am thankful I had that hospice experience because I am so much more appreciative of every death and every person that comes into care.
And same thing on the other side then. So you're seeing it, like you said, Jackie, full circle, where you saw someone pass and then you're on the other side of it. So you see that transformation, and that's a challenging thing to deal with. What was the worst part about that job, or like the one thing you hated doing, or something that we funeral directors might not really get a grasp on our everyday basis?
It was very physically demanding and a lot grosser than I would say than being in the prep room. There
Come
was
on, give it to
you're
us.
just
How so?
you're a glorified butt wiper at the end of the day. You mean you're
I
changing
knew
six,
it.
seven diapers a day, and
Ooh.
you're getting covered in stuff, and you're in the
Oh.
shower room, and it's hot and it's humid, and it's just it got
Oh.
messy. At least in the prep room, there's ventilation, and they're
Yeah.
not going anywhere. They're not running away from you.
They're
They're
not
not.
squirming on you. But there's something about doing that that is a special person's work that you did, and all nurses and hospice nurses especially, because they're incapable of doing it themselves, and you're doing something that for them that they can't do, like I said, for themselves. And there's something really special and really beautiful. As much as it is disgusting, there's something really beautiful about doing that when you look at it from that perspective, because just giving yourself unto others is really important thing to do.
Yeah, and it's just something I'm very grateful I had, the ability to see both sides of, especially going into the
Right.
prep room.
So you saw people, removal teams coming in, and you're taking people probably on a day-to-day basis, and that sparked a little bit more of that fire for you. What is it about transfer services or removals that you find so appealing? And it seems like that might be the route that you would want to go, at least maybe for a bit, after your pregnancy. Well, tell us about that.
I love doing hands-on care, and I find it a lot more easier at the end of the day than to sit there and write a whole contract for someone and be like, "I'm sorry, your mom's dead. Can I have $2,000?" I really struggle with that, and I love, as
Hard.
weird as it is, I love the gore, and I love seeing the scene, and I love being behind the yellow tape. I love being with the police officers, and it's really satisfying for the soul at the end of the day, especially as it relates to hospice, it's really similar to me, and that's just where I believe I thrive. And I'm still trying to find my comfort when it comes to directing, because I do struggle with handing people that bill at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you're getting a workout in every day too when you're doing
Yeah.
removal. So, but yeah, that's something that I think a great majority of funeral directors struggle with is that bill. And because they're going through such a sensitive time, and because we, for the vast majority of us, are very caring people and we're very empathetic, and we aren't as much as some of the public will let you down to believe that we're money grabbers, which is just ridiculous. But being able to having to go through that and handing that bill is challenging. And that's part of what I've tried to do over the course of my career is normalize that a little bit and to show the value behind the scenes of what morticians do. Because when people see that and they get a little bit at least of a better grasp, not that they're fully going to get it because we can't tell and show everything for out of their respect of their loved ones, but showing what we do behind the scenes makes it a little bit easier because families are going to know what we're doing. And the same
Oh, yeah.
thing goes from the other side of things. Like, we want the family to feel comfortable and we want them to feel at ease and we want them to be energetic almost, not quite, but not so rigid about giving over that payment because we want them to see the value in what we do. So our services need to be carried out in such a way that they're like, of course I will pay you whatever it takes because you're doing something that is really important for my loved one and my family as far as the service. So those are things that you just have to work on. I think it's a challenging thing for people that have met with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of families. It's still hard to get that. But if you try to look at it from this point of view of we're doing something for them that is beautiful and special, and at the same time, we're trying to keep our doors open, we're trying to run a business and help our community and help ourselves and help our own families. That's the way I try to mesh those two so that it works for me at least.
I agree. And I think it can even be go back to mortuary school, because we were really taught that we were going to be grief counselors, not so much salesmen, for lack of better terms. You know, they want you to learn about, you know, how people grieve and anger and sadness. And yes, there is some of that when there is an emotional breakdown, but majority of your day, it's not like that. You're not sitting there, you know, coaching people. You're providing education on your services and what you do and all that stuff, but it's not anything that school could have ever prepared me for. I really don't think so.
It's so hands-on. Becoming a funeral director, mortician, being in the prep room, being on services, meeting with families, it's hands-on. And there's nothing that you can really, really do. You could try your hardest during your preparation in school, but it's that hands-on stuff that is going to make you better at it, and the practice that's going to make you better. And trying to pick up pieces from other people is a big word of advice, is learn from others, take in what they're saying, and really take it to heart and say, okay, I can learn from other people's mistakes, or I can learn from what people are successful with and make it your own. Yeah, it's not easy, but it does take time and effort and persistence too. What about your career now? So, you're in Idaho, is that right? You're in Idaho?
Yep, I work
On the
between
border?
Idaho and Washington.
Okay. Tell us about where you're at now and how that experience is. With the funeral home that you're currently with, and what's going on out there?
The funeral home I'm currently with, it's a locally corporate company. They've been around for 100 years or such, and we're having really bad staffing issues. We have a lot of people just getting burnt out and walking out. But right now, I'm kind of helping out on the Idaho side, being unlicensed, and helping on the Washington side as an intern for funeral directing. And it's kind of a mess. We are hoping that we can find a fully licensed sponsor for me in Idaho once baby comes. Then after that, I'll have my sponsor. I'll be a mortician. We'll be all good to go. But it's just this uncertainty of we can't even handle our normal caseload kind of thing. And
Oh
but it's a
no.
great company. They have beautiful cemeteries out here. The whole staff is just
Yeah.
awesome. And but there are parts of it, because they are more corporate owned, that make me miss family home, even when it comes to interacting with families and how
Right.
paperwork is done. But yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. What is it like being on the border? I know of some friends and people I've talked to the podcast, like I'm in Chicago, but I know people on the north side of Illinois, the northern part of Illinois, that are on the Wisconsin border or Iowa border. And it's very interesting how you need different licensing, and same thing with people all over the country. It doesn't matter where you're at. If you're on one of those cities that are on border on different states, it's a little bit different. So give us the rundown what that's like out there.
It's a little bit of a mess just because
Yeah.
Idaho and Washington are so different. Idaho doesn't have just that separate embalmer's license. That's not an option. You have funeral directing or mortician, versus in Washington, you have funeral director or embalmer. It does take longer to become an embalmer than it does a funeral director in Washington, but both can be done in Idaho as mortician in half the time. So it's an absolute mess. And then there's residency laws. So if your mortician is not legally living in Idaho, then they can't be your resident mortician. And it's just a disaster.
Oh
So
my
even
gosh, the
finding people is
chaos.
just a mess.
So, what is your plan then? Like, if it's me, does it work? Like, if I go to school or if I take my boards in Idaho, I can be fully licensed in both and then just have to transfer it over somehow to what? Like, what is that like? That, wow, that sounds
So
very
my
messed up.
plan is to find that sponsor. Once I get the sponsor, I can, because I legally live in Idaho, I can have 1 year of working under this mortician and have my mortician license. From there, I can then just easily transit over to Washington. Unfortunately, that's just not the case for people coming in, because you have to have your license active for 5 years before transferring into Idaho. So how they do it is just so
This is
against the
crazy.
small market for directors. It's unworkable, and it's a hard field to find people to work for anyways, let alone people who are done with school, who have passed their boards, and who have the proper residency. It's a mess.
The hardest part is the 5 years, because people drop off left and right after three. Like, I think the average lifetime of a lifetime, hilarious. Of a funeral director, I think is like 6 or 7 years. I think that's the average length of time, and to have to have 5 years is absurd. Man, I just wish that they would be able to standardize this across with the craziness that's gone on in some of the states, like for example, Colorado recently, but it's happened all over the country. It would be just such a treat for everyone if we could be like, this is how we do it. And it doesn't matter what state you're in. You don't have to transfer. You don't have to have residency. You don't have to have a separate license. Figure this crap out and just like have it
I
standard for
agree.
everyone. Make it easy.
The
God.
only thing that should be different, in my opinion, is state testing for directors, state laws. That's
Yeah.
the only thing that should vary. I feel like everything else can be the
Right. It would just make our lives much easier, especially for people and funeral directors that are on border states like you. That would make it a lot easier. What's the game plan after baby comes then? Is your husband moving out there? Are you going back? What's the plan?
We're gonna have to do a couple months, just me and baby by ourselves until dad's out of the army. And then once he's out, the plan is for me to go back to work full time and hopefully get my license between both states active. And I'm hoping to kind of bounce around, because my company owns quite a few funeral homes, quite a few pop-up stores,
Yeah.
storefronts. So I'm hoping to have access to the prep room on a daily basis, but also I understand there's a huge need for directors right now too. So
Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
kind of a mess. I don't know. It's kind of what the future
Well,
holds, and
it seems like you're gonna get an opportunity at least in
hope
some
so.
way, shape, or form. Not sure exactly what it's gonna look like, but it seems like they need the help. And that's a good thing. That's better than where you were trying to get in the door, your foot in the door. But that's good. Have you had any good experiences or good story experiences over your career, whether it was on a removal or with a family or in the prep room? Do you have anything that would pique my interest?
A lot of messy, gory removals. A lot of them at the end of the day are suicides, and those they're really, really tough and they're really messy. And
Give us one story. I want to hear
one
one.
story that was really, we had driven out a couple hours to the small town, nobody lives out there, Washington, and we picked up this decedent. It was an obvious drug overdose. He was a really tall guy. We had to end up turning him on the gurney upside down so we can take him out. The whole house was trashed. And it was really sad. I hate it because there was just children's toys everywhere. And it was just like really sad. And
Horrible.
what was weird was a couple weeks later, we got a call for the sibling of this decedent who had passed away. And when it comes to coroners out here, there's quite a shortage. So sometimes our removal techs will fill in for the coroner role. And they're not educated, in my opinion. They're not really up to status quo when it comes to being a good coroner. And he had deemed his cause of death a suicide. And I was asking about it. I was like, oh, so did he hang himself? And he's like, yes. I said, did you have to cut the rope? And he's like, no. I was like, tell me more. He said, I found him on the bed with a belt around his throat. And I'm like, that doesn't sound too much like a suicide, in my opinion.
Might be something else going on.
Yeah, come to find out, my parents knew the family of this decedent.
Oh,
And
darn.
what had happened, it was a drug deal gone bad. And
What?
because this coroner deemed it a suicide, they didn't do the proper autopsy that was needed. So now the family had to pay out of pocket to do a separate autopsy to prove that it was a drug overdose. Or a murder in this case, and it was just a disaster. I mean, I think there was lack of competency on this alleged coroner's side, aside from circumstances. Like you walk into the situation and you see that it was somebody obviously very violent had happened. It wasn't just a simple suicide, but that was a little, what a disaster. Horrible for the family.
Yeah, that's terrible. Just so sad for the family. Do you think the drug dealer tried to make it look like it was a
Oh my
suicide, or what
gosh.
was, yeah?
Yeah, in my opinion, I if
Delusional.
you were keen on, what violence looks like and what versus what suicide looks like, you'd very obviously be able to see the signs, but I just don't think this person had that kind of training. It's
I'm
really sad.
sure it doesn't sound like a. It sounds like they should stick to drug dealing and not murdering.
The
Oh,
other
that's.
unfortunate case I had was it was my first suicide ever, and we had gotten reports from the news that it was a stabbing. So there's a whole article on this news website that the stabbing happened in this park, and we went out there, and it was a mom who had taken her life in her car, and it was really messy, really violent, and I was already feeling pretty emotionally charged about the case. It was my first time handling that kind of thing. And police officers, time and time again, just don't like to get their hands dirty from what I've seen. And I was the little person on the team, and I ended up having to get into the car and essentially hug her out of it, and there was glass and blood and everything. And she was one of those people that it's like, from the window view, she looks smaller than she is from the bottom down, and it was quite a workout. But after, I'm covered in blood, and I had gone back to our removal van, and for the first time doing a removal, the whole news team is there trying to ask me stuff, and they got spotlights there because they believed it was a stabbing. And it was so sad because, she had shot herself in the head, and that was everywhere, and it was just so sad. And then I got to end up meeting with the family, and it was something I was very thankful I was there for. But it was just kind of rude on the news side to just show up at the scene and be asking questions and shoving microphones in people's faces. And then to this day, they still have it marked as a stabbing on their website that's what happened that day. And it's like, well, it's good that they don't know for the sake of the family, but it's just horrible that the news team is like, just anything will take.
Right, they just want that story, and they flock to
Yeah.
it like flies. That so
Yeah.
did you get a quote in the paper? Are you famous?
No, I didn't say anything, and there was no news broadcasting of it or anything. So I was like, that's good for the family's sake, but I wanted that moment of fame.
Wow. And they were there, so when you were taking her out, they were actually there on scene so they could see things.
They were pushed behind the yellow tape, so police
Good.
officers would not let them back there. I was very grateful for that, but
Oh boy.
horrible.
What a terrible thing. And good that you were able to be there for them and then continue to help them through arrangements and things. It's good when you're able to help that full circle from the start to
Oh, yeah.
finish. It does make a difference. And I think the families feel that too.
I love it. I think it makes the job so much better when you can get a full picture of like what happened, what the removal was like, and then you can establish rapport from there. And yeah, I think that's the way to do it. And I know there's not a lot of directors that do removals, but if they get the chance to, I think it's a great thing to do just so you're more empathetic with the family, you're more understanding of the situation if you can be. But I think it's a great way to go.
It is. I mean, I used to make removals all the time. I don't as much anymore, but I always remember wanting to be the first one on the scene, especially if it was, at a family's home or a nursing home and the family's present. That was always such a nice thing for us to do because you could show face and they see you later on at the service or during arrangements and they're like, oh, you were actually the one that came and helped out. Like,
Yep.
wow, that's beautiful. What a great thing that you're able to help me through this whole process from beginning to end. I think families do really love it. Obviously, it's not possible with every funeral home. Every situation is
Right.
different. People's schedules are different. Physical abilities and capabilities are different. So it just there's so many factors that go into the removal side of things. But if you're able to do it, the more power to you. That's a really nice thing, right? Well, Jackie, this has been a ton of fun. Love talking to you. We hope that everything goes good with the birth and your little baby, and hopefully Dad gets to reunite with you soon, and you get that full license, and you'll be ready to rock. Your life will be flowing.
Roll.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Jackie.
Thank you.